Last month, David Caruso took the first big step in his attempted return to primetime television by appearing before TV critics in Pasadena to discuss his new fall series, Michael Hayes. I was there, and so was Paul Haggis, who just joined the staff as an executive producer. Paul Haggis isn't exactly a household name, and neither are some of the shows he's created. But to most fans of quality TV, his Due South and Easy Streets are about as good as series television can get. I started off our interview by asking Paul Haggis why he thought Easy Streets had failed in the ratings.
Personally, I blame the critics, especially the New York critics. the New York critics just love this to the extent of I think, antagonizing everyone. I think it was Marvin Kipman called me the Percy Bysshe Shelley of TV fiction. And
That'll get him right to the tube.
You know, and that's the one that exactly is going to run out there. And I called him up and thanked him for ruining my career. I mean, do not get to walk around Hollywood and go, what are we going to do? Let's get that epic poet guy to do our next big blockbuster series. So I blame the critics.
Yeah, well, actually, what you did with Easy Street, since it wasn't just New York critics, it was critics all across the country who went crazy over that show, you basically proved for the 90s, if not for all time, that critics have no power, critics have no, you basically made my life meaningless, so...
I'm surprised they'd let you on NPR, Dave.
We'll just move on to the next to the next question here. But, I mean, after... Due South, after Easy Streets, why Les Moonves, the guy who runs CBS, comes to you and says, we want to have you involved with what is one of their big high-profile shows of the fall. What did they want you to do?
You mean,
with
what in God's name were they thinking, getting me involved in this?
You keep rephrasing my questions.
Yes. I know. Well, as you said, given my track record, I have no idea, Dave, thank you again, why they'd get me involved in this.
No,
but I jumped at it. I thought, to working with David Caruso, who I thought was just magnetic when he was on NYPD Blue, and working with John Romano, who I admired a long time as a writer, I jumped at the chance.
But the second, what is now going to be the second episode of this, the pilot, which you didn't have a part of, which critics were shown before press conference last month in L.A., it, to me, had a couple of weaknesses in it where you could sort of predict what was going to happen, which that sort of stuff is not really a hallmark of your kind of writing. Do you, are you free enough in terms of your opinion to be able to say whether you noticed the same sort of things and whether or not you were brought in to help correct that part of it?
Well, no one came to me and said, Paul, the writing you do is incredibly obtuse. Could you use a little of that in this? But I think it makes a nice mixture because with Easy Streets, we went, 10 episodes and nobody knew what the hell was going on at any time. And so if you mix that with perhaps a couple of errors in the pilot, which were maybe a little too obvious, then they'll somehow come down the center.
So when it comes to... getting the show together and getting it up and running, what have you found to be the things that you had to correct the most in terms of the initial concept?
I guess the writers fell into the same trap I did on Easy Streets, and just that we tried to tell too much in 1 hour. And so having just well learned my lesson from that, I think we all could try to simplify the story and tell a more emotional a simpler story on one level and more emotionally complex on another.
Okay. So, now, tell me what the comeback of David Caruso means. You were at the press conference in July where there was a lot of incendiary stuff going on in terms of people wanting him, I guess, to talk about his film career and why he would come back to TV now. And I wonder what it's like playing backstage. I thought that Caruso handled that conference as well as could be expected, but a lot of people seem to want him to fall on his own sword.
Yeah, I thought he did a pretty good job there and did some sort of reasonable mea culpas for his mistakes while not falling on the sword. I mean, there's got to be a lot of pressure on him. There is a lot of pressure on him. You see him, he's literally backstage. He's got a lot of riding on this show, and that's always going to cause problems. It did between the two of us at the very beginning. We were trying to feel our way through, and And we were both, you know, trying to do the best show we possibly could. And I'd write a script, and he'd go, no, you can't, I can't do that. And I'd go, oh, what the hell do you know? And so we'd argue back and forth and come to some sort of mutual respect and go, oh, cool, let's do this. So it's worked out quite well so far.
Now, but I heard one David Caruso story from that was told by a writer on the show on the original episode of Michael Hayes, that supposedly at the very first meeting, David Caruso came in holding an 8x10 glossy of himself and announced, this is what this show is about.
Well, I have no idea, actually, if the story is true or not. So I can't really comment on that. But if you're saying, is it indicative of like a huge ego? No, I haven't found that at all. I found him to be actually... well, not easy to work with. You know, actors in general aren't easy to work with. And look at Joey Pants. I mean, one of my favorite actors in the world is just a huge piece of work.
That's Joey Pantoliano from Easy Streets, who played Jimmy Murtha.
And I love the man. I would work with him, and he would work with me any second. But we had screaming fights. So then we'd leave the room, you know, he'd argue back and forth, and then he'd say, you have no respect for the actors. And I'd say, oh, what do you know? You hack actor, you don't have no respect for the writers. And then he'd leave the room and come back and throw his arms around me going, I love you, man! And then walk around going, oh, we had the greatest talk. So there's always a dynamic between writers and actors that you have to be able to work things through. And David is certainly no exception to that.
Okay, now you carry around a mantle right now because of the series that you've done as a quality TV writer-producer.
I have that mantle with me.
You have that mantle, yes.
I carry it everywhere.
I hope it's not too heavy. And we go back to your earliest TV credits, and I see Different Strokes and The Facts of Life.
I don't see those. What are you looking at?
I'm looking at probably a more complete resume than you might be carrying.
Than I would ever admit, yes.
And perhaps... as a writer-producer on those shows, I have to admit that in the 70s when I was a TV critic in the 80s, I wasn't watching every episode of Facts of Life and Different Strokes. And I may have missed the good ones that you wrote.
Yeah, you in fact did. They were some of the best television, I think, to air in the 80s, I personally think. But that's just one man's opinion.
So tell me about those years and how you outgrew them.
I was very fortunate to get the jobs on those shows, so I fought to get them. I was a young man in Hollywood, 23, when I started trying to break into writing, and I finally was lucky enough to come to the attention of Norman Lear, who then put me on Different Strokes and Facts of Life and One Day at a Time and this little show Sweet Surrender for Dana Delaney, and I had just a hell of a time and learned my craft.
But we go from there, and then we go from Different Strokes and Facts of Life. I'm not holding you responsible for those, nor am I saying that Norman Lear didn't do some wonderful television.
He just didn't do them with me.
I mean, it's just Different Strokes and Facts of Life. I wouldn't push into that pile. But then you do Tracy Ullman show, and this is stuff I didn't know about you until I did research for this. Tracy Ullman in the last season of L.A. Law, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So what skits did you do on Tracy Ullman's show? Since you just looked at them recently, you can't even say you don't remember.
They're two of my favorites. One was called My Date with Il Duce, which was for Isabella Rossellini. And the concept was...
Wrote that?
That was me.
That was wonderful.
I went to pitch it and said, okay, I believe... everyone knows that... that Mussolini started out as a meek, mild school teacher. Well, I say meek, mild. He at least started out as a school teacher. And somehow he made the transition from school teacher to the greatest fascist leader of all time. I think it was on a date with Isabella Rossellini. And so so I wrote that sketch, and that was a lot of fun. And so just watching him transform from the school teacher into the fascist leader in 4 minutes. And I think rather well. And then the other one I did was for Marty Short, and it was actually the only sketch ever to have been banned on Fox. And it was called P.S.
On
Your...
Fox?
Yeah. It was called P.S. Your Wife is in Hell. And it was about a widower and a priest and a nun who were returning from a funeral. And the priest has to explain to the widower that he faked last rites and his wife is in hell. and so we tried to get that vibe, but didn't quite make it.
Paul Haggis is an executive producer of Michael Hayes, the new David Caruso series premiering this fall. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Paul Haggis, creator of Easy Streets and Due South. We just left off with Tracy Ullman. So you do Tracy Ullman for 2 weeks, and then you get in on the last one of the stranger seasons of L.A. Law. Was David Kelly still there? Was he gone by then?
No, it was Billy Finkelstein.
Okay.
And so David Kelly was gone. Actually, before that, I did the pilot for Due South. And then while waiting for Due South to be picked up or not, Stephen Bochco asked me to come over and consult on the last year of L.A. Law. And since I knew nothing about the law and had never written anything like that, I said, cool. I mean, if you're foolish enough to hire me, I'll come do it.
Okay. So, but meantime, your heart is in Due South.
And
how does this show develop in the first place? It's one of the first programs to come out of Canada and show up on American television. And I think that it surprised CBS in terms of how well the movie pilot did. And how did it come about? What was your inspiration for this?
Well, I wanted to create animosity between countries that had lived peacefully together since the War of 1812. And so I said, you know, Canada and the States have gotten along much too well for much too long. Let me see what I can do about that. And so I decided to start pointing out the differences between Canadians and Americans and see if I couldn't start my own little border war. And I think I succeeded for a while.
Well, in the pilot, there's actually a scene in which the two stars, Paul Gross as Fraser, the Mountie, and David Marciano as the Chicago cop, actually are back up in Canada discussing some of those very differences while they're being pursued by some bad guys intent on killing them. I'd like to play that just for a second and give a taste of Due South.
When I graduated from the academy, my father gave me one piece of advice. He said, always... No, he said, never... Well, actually, he gave me two pieces of advice. I've forgotten the other one, but the important one is, never chase a man over a cliff.
That's supposed to mean something in Canadian, isn't it?
If you're going to take on a man, you better know more than he does. Our strength is, I know this area better than anyone. Their weakness is, they think they have an advantage.
Let me see that bag. Being an American, I also know where my strength lies, and that's in being as heavily armed as possible at all times.
How many of these sorts of Canada-America things did CBS feel that Americans were going to either get or appreciate?
I don't think they noticed them, for the most part. They saw the scenery, and they thought it was funny, and they put it on. I mean, the lines like, I mean, when David Marciano at the end, the Ray character, they finally win, and they've bested all these bad guys, and he turns to the Mountie and says, you realize we just took out 7 guys. You know, one more and you qualify for American citizenship. And and it just goes right past everyone. And so no one really notices or cares. So, I think the fact that that the Canadians took a lot of abuse in the episode, we balanced things out our own particular xenophobia was satisfied here.
Well, in Canada, this program went on to win lots of the Canadian equivalents of the Emmys.
Yes.
Over the years, and was... what would it be America's equivalent of in terms of its popularity way up there in Canada?
Well, in the second year, we actually bested hockey as the most popular show.
Is that possible?
In Canada. Yeah, we beat Hockey Night in Canada. I have the trophy sitting at home. I thought that was incredibly cool. It was a bit of a phenomenon up there. So we were all very, very, very proud of that.
Is it true that you offered to come back to Due South to help a little bit or offer some scripts and they really did say no thanks, or was that another Paul Haggis joke?
You really like to stir up trouble, don't you? Yeah, that's true.
Well, Well, tell me more about it, because I don't think anybody knows about this yet.
No, I'm not going to tell you about that.
These are the rules. I ask good questions. I mean, you were sworn in before we began the interview.
No, I offered to come back for the third season, and they just didn't find my services necessary. And it wasn't quite that, but in any case, I'm not doing the show.
So now we're up to Easy Streets, which I went on the record plenty of times here on NPR and in the Daily News about absolutely unabashedly loving. So this is where you should get a little bit less defensive.
I'm a lot more comfortable suddenly.
Okay. Was the pitch meeting easy for this program to get it on the air? You see something like Easy Streets, and I'm baffled. I really appreciate quality television, but I don't know how this one got on the air in the first place.
Neither do I, and that's, I guess, why I'm so grateful to CBS and continue to be. I pitched this thing very badly, and I went in and said, I want to just think about good guys and bad guys, only you're not going to be able to tell who's who, and it's sort of dark, and it's about moral ambiguity that you can never really understand what's going on. And they said, cool, do that. And I said, what? And they said, oh yeah, that sounds great. You can do mob stuff, great. Make it as dark as you want. I said, oh. And I sort of checked the door, made sure I was in the right building, and went away and did it. But this was, I think, the first thing that Leslie Moonves bought as a when he took over, and he wanted to make his mark. And I was so thrilled that he had that faith in me. I went away and wrote the script and gave it to them and turned it in. And they read it and called me up 2 days later and said, we're doing it. And I said, did you read the script? And they said, yeah, we love it. We're doing it. I said, okay. And so I went off and shot it. And they called up and said, we love it. It's fabulous. You're putting it on. And I said, were you watching the same show I was? And so I was thrilled and to get it on the air. And the fact that it only lasted for 10 episodes, I figured is 10 more than I ever thought would get on and stay on. So.
Okay. Now, what about, do you have an ending of Easy Streets that you're not sharing with anyone?
Yes. In fact, I do. I knew what was going to happen from the beginning, and I still know. I get calls. I think I get about 4 or 5 calls a week still from people asking me if I'll tell them or if I'll give them some of the scripts or something. And of course, I won't. That's just my perverse nature.
So it's not that you feel that there may be some wrap-up telemovie in the future where you would assemble the cast out of goodwill and finish it. It's just you're being mean and not going to share.
Yes. No, on some level, I guess I can't let go of that series. I really love it, and hoping beyond hope, and that I'll be able to do something with it in the future, whether it's on television or in a book or something. I don't know what, but I certainly hope. I dearly miss that cast. I miss them very much, and I'd love to be able to get together and do something with them again.
And if we were to guess that it was corruption high within the police department,
then you'd be guessing, and that's what you'd be doing.
All right, okay. All right. Well, listen, I love your failures, so I'm glad that you're still there to produce them, and I hope that at some point
that Michael Hayes is not one. Yes,
that critical success and popular success coincide for you.
Well, thank you, Dave.
And thanks a lot for being here today.
Oh, thank you. This is a lot of fun.
Paul Haggis is an executive producer of Michael Hayes, premiering next month on CBS.